see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Hello, hello, hello. How's everybody doing out there? Well, it's getting a little cooler now. We've had some great weather this winter. I was out mowing the lawn, even in January, if you can believe it. Not that it was growing. I was trying to mow some of the lawn down that I haven't been able to get to. So, you know, recovering some more land, like, you know what I mean? And it's been excellent weather. Me and Miss Elkie working the land, you know, cutting down trees and little trees. There's all kinds of little trees that need to be cut down. And she's out there working along with me. She says hello to all of you. Ruff, ruff, ruff. You know what's interesting is I've been watching some of the old Naked City, which I had never seen that series ever before. And when she hears sirens, she howls. But it's interesting that when she hears the sirens of those days, they were totally different. Doesn't make her howl at all. I think that's really interesting. It's no kind of conspiracy or anything, I don't think. I'm just saying that it's just interesting. By the way, some good news. I don't know if you've heard or not. But I believe I have all the Bertrand Comparé from the Revelation series from the Master Reel-to-Reels into the digital domain, in which now I can work on them and get them squared away, Yahweh willing. And this is good news. That means I can start working on the 41 Dr. Wesley Swift tapes. Some of those are ones like Friday night and Wednesday night, and then there's ones that have titles. So it ought to be real interesting, and we're able to, I have permission to put those up in their entirety onto my BitChute channel and so on and so forth. So I think that's a great, you know, accomplishment. I've accomplished that, and we're on our way. And finished many projects. Once you finish projects, it brings new projects to do. So we're moving right along. I have finished all the original projects that were supposed to be done, and now moving on to the next levels. And so it's exciting to accomplish. And so I Hope you're accomplishing things this year. I hope that you keep yourself busy so you don't think about all the misery of what this world is. I also wanted to talk about the bushfires that I mentioned on the news this week, that about 183 people had been arrested for causing fires. A fellow from down there wrote me, and he said, how much of the Jews news do you believe? Well, the Jews news are the ones that, and the politicians and the celebrities are all saying that this is climate change that's causing this. So the 183 people that have been arrested, I don't know who they are, what they are. All I know is we have lots of enemies. They're probably people that wanted to claim something on their farm or something. You know, that would be my last choice. Other things would be people that don't belong in our countries causing these fires and, you know, so on and so forth. No matter what's happening, it's not good. But I will say that I had been praying for rain, and I, you know, practically begged the Father to send rain there. And the ironic thing is there has been a lot of rain, and now they're talking floods. So these people will make a crisis out of anything they possibly can. If it's on fire, it's a crisis. If it's rains, it's a crisis. You know what I mean? It's just beyond imagination. This world is just so far over the line and crazy that, you know, I don't know, you know, you really don't know what to believe from any news at all, really. And I think that's the way they want it. Just like they make it so that you don't know who you can trust of your brothers. They want you to be like that. They don't want you to be able to trust your brothers. They don't even want you to trust your family. But one thing I can tell you is you can trust the Father, and that's for sure. 1,000% sure. 1,000,000% sure. And, you know, if it wasn't for the Father, I mean, just think what kind of a world you'd be in. I mean, without the Father, it is pure hell. Being separated from the Father in this world is pure hell. But not as bad as, you know, if we had no contact at all. So, I hope you're all, I'm not hearing too much from people. I have been studying more and more of this Apostle Paul thing, and it is wild. And I mean wild. I must say that this William G. Findlay's series is very educating, both scripturally and historically. It's, you know, did you know, for instance, that it's just amazing. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. I can't think of it right this second, but I'm sure that more than one of the Roman emperors claimed Caligula. That's who it is. He claimed that he was God. And it's the strangest thing because they've changed the holy place from being in Jerusalem where we used to live, and they've switched it to Rome. But I'm not going to get into the Apostle Paul right now. I'm just saying that I am finding out quite a bit of information, and I'm learning a lot of things. And just as I promised you, we'd learn a lot about the scriptures, and I certainly am myself. I certainly hope you are. See, these, you have to listen to these tapes over and over and over before you get a lot of it in to, you know, to what's going on. I've looked up some of the scriptures. I have some research to do, and this is, but it is, it is amazing. And I've learned a lot about scriptures and history, the history of things like, you know, who the wives were of these Roman emperors. And it's very interesting that there was no separation of church and state, of course. The emperor was the religious and political leader all in one, which shows me again about the founding fathers, how they wanted to keep separation of church and state and no king, no monarch, which is the will of the Jews. So let's get into Maurice Pinet's book. We're on page 209 if you're following along. And we ended up on the word finally. Finally, let us examine another of the teachings of the Gnostic revolutionary movement. The Jews who sowed poison in Christian society were careful to ensure that said poison did not end up poisoning the poisoners themselves. The synagogue of Satan had to face up to this grave danger for the first time. It is very difficult to disseminate poisonous ideas without running the risk of being affected by them. Just like chemtrails, you have to wonder how sick these Jews really are in their minds, because as they chemtrail the skies, they're also being poisoned by it, unless they have a remedy that we don't know about, which is another possibility. Anyway, back to the book. It is true that the gnosis, which means knowledge, which the Jews at first spread in the synagogue, was in the main a collection of mystic interpretations of Holy Scripture, which stood in close connection with the Kabbalah. But the accumulation of stupidities, contradictions, and perverse actions which the Jews smuggled into the Christian gnosis formed a serious danger for the synagogue itself, but which the latter certainly guarded against by energetically combating every possibility of infection among the Jews. Now, when he says Hebrews in this book, I change it to Jews because the Jews are not Hebrews. 1800 years later, the same phenomenon appears. The Jews, as spreaders of atheism and of communist materialism among the Christians, Mohammedans, and other other peoples, take every kind of precautionary measure to prevent the materialistic cancer from infecting the Jewish communities, which they have been better able to achieve at present than in the times of Gnosticism. For the experience of 1800 centuries in this kind of service has made these destroyers into true masters in the art of handling poisons. Very interesting. Very interestingly said, infecting the Jews themselves, right? Without infecting, it's the art of handling poisons and of spreading them throughout the world without the poison infecting the Jews themselves, which is also what the pharmakia is, which is also what the cell phone is. In case you don't know it, the people that from Apple and these different computer companies and so forth, the Jews, they only allow their children a certain amount of time per day to be on that thing because they know what it will do and what it can do. So it's even surprising that they would allow them any time on the thing, but they do. You should take note of that and think about that. Pharmakia itself is the handling of poisons, is it not? Okay, we continue. At all events, even still in our days, the rabbis must be constantly on guard in order to prevent materialism, with which they have immersed half of the surrounding world, from causing damage in the Jewish families. They constantly seize upon measures of different kind in order to prevent this. The atheistic and materialistic poison is only destined for the Christians and other peoples of the world. You know, when it says Gentiles, you know, you should just say it says for the Christians and the Gentiles. You realize that we have to keep wrestling with these Jewish created words that are, you know, nonsense, you know? So the other peoples, the dragon seed, in order to render their domination easier, for Jewry must preserve itself in its mystique purer than ever. They know that it is mysticism which makes men who fight for an ideal invincible. It's mysticism which makes men who fight for an ideal invincible. Just as the Jews have no scruples at other times when they spread teachings against, listen to the term these Catholics use, Jehovah himself. Yahweh's name is not Jehovah. The Father in heaven's name is not Jehovah. As a matter of fact, we found out that it's the devil's name. And it says they've advocated the cult of Satan, which is so common in black magic. So they now have no scruples in spreading the atheistic materialism of the Jew Marx, although the latter denies the existence of God of Israel himself. Then the ends justify the means. This maxim the Jews observe down to its most unbelievable consequences. With the conversion of Constantine, and I don't agree with this conversion. This is one of these bedtime conversions, you know, I believe. From what I understand, this was done on his deathbed. And I do not believe in that kind of a conversion. You don't live your life as a hellion and then decide you're going to convert on the last day, the last hour of your life. I don't believe that that works. I don't believe in it at all. Maybe you do, I don't know. Almost out of coffee already. Wow. So, it says, with the conversion of Constantine, the victory of the Holy Church over paganism, Gnosticism, and Jewry was complete. See what a lie that is? It was Constantine himself that mixed the two together. And the church is still rife with paganism. And they're telling you they had the victory over paganism. They didn't. Number one, paganism, Judaism is paganism. It's part of Judaism, the traditions of men. Actually, Jews aren't men. Traditions of the most subtle beast of the field. But when you think about it, all of that is the same thing. Paganism, Gnosticism, and Jewry are all in the same boat. Could those be the three frogs? No, I don't think so. But very interesting, the lies that they even lie to themselves in these books. When once the church was controller of the enormous power of the Roman Empire, the Jews lacked any possibility of persecuting it further and attacking it directly or inciting persecution through pagan emperors against Christianity, as they had done previously. However, the synagogue of Satan did not give way before such a bleak picture. It clearly understood that in order to destroy the church, only one aid remained of the three which we have studied. It directed its attention to its fifth column of false new converts who were smuggled into Christianity in order through church divisions and internal background movements to be able to attain the desired goal, the destruction of the Church of Christ. The fact that in some points the Christian doctrine was not well defined made the task far easier for them. That statement is huge. The fact that in some points the Christian doctrine was not well defined made the task easier for them. See, not to get into this, but the Apostle Paul's gospel is what made it easier for them because of its universalism, which the Catholic Church adhered to. Not only was it pagan, not only was it sprinkled with Christianity, but it was universal. That's what Catholic means. And so listen to the sentence again. The fact that in some points the Christian doctrine was not well defined made the task far easier for them to destroy the Church of Christ. That's what you see? That's exactly what I'm finding out. That's exactly what has taken place, ladies and gentlemen. And if we can get to the point where we could get people, I mean, it's hard to get them to believe in the exclusivity of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But it'll be another whole thing to get them to understand that the reason why they don't believe in that exclusivity is because of the Apostle Paul's gospel, his different gospel that doesn't belong with Christianity. Chapter 5, the Jews, Arius, and his heresy. Arianism. Now, hey, we're just touching on something right here, right now. Remember from Fritz Springmeier's book, we talked about Arianism. Remember? So we're going to get another account, it looks like, here. This is Arianism. So let's see what it says. Arianism, the great heresy which split Christianity over 3.5 centuries, was the work of a concealed Jew who outwardly practiced Christianity, a striking and infamous example of the descendants of Judas Iscariot, like all those priests who, as members of the Jewish Fifth Column, have infiltrated into the Catholic Church. The well-known American writer William Thomas Walsh, who is outstanding for his zealous Catholicism, we got to keep on glorifying that church, don't we? Has well-documented works, says to us, referring to the mode of action of the Jews who infiltrated into Christianity, the following Arius, that's A-R-I-U-S, the Catholic Jew, father of the heresy, treacherously attacked the divinity of Christ, and he was successful in dividing the Christians' world, the Christian world, for centuries. Now, see, what this Arianism is it means that they don't believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ. They don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God, etc., etc., which you know what that means. So if you were to adhere to this heresy, that means you're Antichrist. And that's that. It continues. From the trials by the Inquisition against the crypto-Jews who were called the Judaizing heretics, one can conclude that the Trinity is one of the Catholic dogmas which the Jews reject most violently. For what repels them the most of all is all in their deadly hatred towards Christ is the fact that Jesus Christ is regarded as the second person within the Holy Trinity. This means that God is one in essence and three in person. It is therefore illuminating that the Jews, after they had infiltrated into the church through their pretended conversion to Christianity, afterwards strove to alter the dogma of the church in such a way as to regard God as one in person and hence to deny the divinity of Christ. You know, it's very interesting that one of the scriptures that William G. Finley brought up was Deuteronomy. Let me see if we can get it up here quickly. Deuteronomy 18:18. Let's just see if we can grab this quick. Because the way I explain this is that the Father took his word and put it into a body. And the manifestation of his word became flesh. It's still him. You know, as I said, as I'm speaking, these are my words. And they are one with me. They're still part of me. But if I took my words and put them into a flesh body, my words only could obey me because they're my words. They couldn't go against me because they're mine. And that's the way I described it. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because it was part of Him, part of the Father. That's why we say the Father in the flesh. So the Father is not going to manifest Himself and expose Himself completely in the material plane and put Himself in that kind of danger. And so by doing it in the flesh body, and it had to be done that way, He protected Himself where he is, but He could also manifest here. And that's why when Yeshua said, when He came back, He said, I must leave now so that I can send you the Comforter, right? See, they couldn't all be in the same place. You know, Jesus had to go back to the Father before the Comforter could really be sent. So that's very interesting. But let's look at this 18:18. And it says, I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren like unto thee, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. So right away, I'm not going to go too far into that. I think I'll save that for the next message. I'm going to do a Word of the Most High. But very interestingly enough, in verse 17 it says, and Yahweh said unto me, they have well spoken in which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren. You see, He didn't say that He would raise up a prophet from China or from any other brethren. He said it from among their brethren, like unto them, like unto thee. And I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. That's who Jesus Christ is. See, I will put my words into his mouth. You understand what I'm saying? See, this is a confirmation. And it says in verse 19, and it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of them. But the prophet which shall presume to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, even that prophet shall die. So that's very interesting. Of course, the Father, when he sends a prophet out, anyway, he tells them what to say, and he puts his words into them, in a sense. But it's very interesting that Jesus Christ, I really think that kind of explains it. See, when the Father sends a prophet out, he says, the prophet will say, thus saith Yahweh, and he will speak what Yahweh told him to say. That's the same way. Any prophet will have the Father's words put into him. You see what I mean? So anyway, that was just an interesting thing. I thought we'd look at that for a moment. So, Arius was born in Libya, which was at this time under Roman rule. Already as a youth, he joined himself to the schism of Meletius, who usurped the office of the Bishop of Alexandria. However, after the cause of Meletius had suffered severe setbacks, Arius was reconciled with the church. It is well known how the Jews make use of such reconciliations with the church, of which they say themselves that such were performed as true comedies, exactly as suits them. The always universally kind Holy Church, they want to keep on, you see, which is fundamentally ready to pardon the repentant sinner, sanctioned the reconciliation with Arius by taking him anew into its holy bosom, while the secret Jew merely made use of this kindness, like all who belong to his race, which isn't a race at all, in order to later cause it inconceivable harm which could easily have caused such misfortune, as that which threatens us today. After Arius had consoled himself, so you see, you have Jews, crypto-Jews, pretending they're Christians. This is nothing new. This has been going on for a long time. We see the pastors of many churches are Jews, just like Joel Osteen, and many, many more. And then we see also that they're in the Catholic Church as priests and so on and so forth, bishops, et cetera, and popes, you see. So nothing has changed. Calvin. I heard from William G. Finley that Calvin had somebody burned at the stake whom he deemed an heretic. Now, Calvin's a Jew named Coughlin, another crypto-Jew. You've heard of Calvinism, right? So, after Arius had consoled himself, he had himself consecrated as Catholic priest and presbyter of the Bishop Alexander of Alexandria, by whom he was entrusted with the Church of Bacchalus. Various outstanding church historians attribute to Arius an extraordinary and impressive ascetism, as well as a remarkable mysticism. Let's look up ascetism and how you spell that if you'd like to look it up with me. Ascetism. Let's check it out. Ascetism. Severe self-discipline and avoidance of all forms of indulgence, typically for religious reasons. Ascetism. So, back there. Various outstanding church historians attribute to Arius an extraordinary and impressive ascetism, as well as a remarkable mysticism, to which are added his great talents as a preacher and a convincing dialectic skill, which allowed him to convince the great mass of believers and even the hierarchies of the Holy Church. The basic principle of the Arian doctrine, okay, listen to this. The basic principle of the Arian doctrine was the Jewish thesis of the absolute unity of God, denying the Trinity and representing Christ solely as the most exalted of all creatures, but in no way was possessing divine nature. This was one of the first serious attempts to provide Christianity with a Jewish stamp. In other words, to demean and to dilute and to delete the divinity of Jesus Christ. He neither attacked Christ nor criticized him, as the professing Jews did, for then his mission would have failed. Who does that sound like? You know who I'm talking about. Because no Christian would have supported him. So again, listen again, and put the Apostle Paul in this place. He neither attacked Christ nor criticized him, as the professing Jews did, for then his mission would have failed, because no Christian would have supported him. In order to arouse no suspicion, he rather praised Jesus beyond all measure. So he gained the sympathy and interest of the faithful, and then in the midst of all these speeches of praise, he allowed his poison to seep in with the cunning denial of the divinity of Jesus Christ, since it is the point which encounters the most stiff-necked rejection by the Jews. It is curious that 1,400 years later, the Jews strike the same note when they deny the divinity of Jesus Christ and simultaneously praise him in their doctrines and instructions in order to provoke no strong reactions amongst Christians introduced into the sect. Well, I don't see them giving any praise to Jesus Christ at all these days, so I don't know what he's talking about. A further innovation. You know, I was watching this Jewish show about how they wrote all the Christmas songs, And this filthy, dirty Jew, he talked about one of the Christmas songs. I think it was Winter Wonderland or one of those. And he said, right at that moment, he took Christ out of Christmas. And he was happy about that. He was very proud of that Christ was removed from Christmas with a Christmas song written by a Jew. Very interesting, isn't it? A further innovation which the Arian heresy brought with it was the attempt to alter the doctrine and policy of the church in relation to the Jews. While Christ damned them and upon various occasions attacked them in the sharpest possible way, and the apostles did the same, as did the church in general in its beginnings, Arius and his heresy strove to effect a true reform in this respect, in that they carried out a pro-Jewish policy and strove for the accommodation to the synagogue of Satan. Now, let me just stop right there, because, I mean, I can't help but comment on this. That's exactly what the Apostle Paul did. Do you hear him really berating the Jews? I mean, he might say something like, beware of the fables of the Jews. But that doesn't mean he wanted you to beware of you know, like, just get rid of the Jews altogether. Just beware of their fables, you see? And I think that that's very interesting. So you realize that the disciples damned the Jews, as well as the Messiah, Jesus, damned the Jews. But the Apostle Paul was sent to the Jew first and then to the Gentile. You see? Ladies and gentlemen, no, that doesn't mean Judean. As far as true Judean, for the Jews lived in Judea and were called Judeans, even though they weren't true Judeans. So to the non-true Judeans first, then to the true Judean, you see. Anyway, see, Paul believed that the Israelites were the Jews first. And I think that if you really would study into it, you will find that to be true. There's a lot of trickery that's going on in this world. Trickery with verbiage that could be very confusing, but the elect will not be deceived. You can be assured of that. And though our brothers and sisters in the past had been deceived about this, they didn't have the historical view to look at that we have. It's a benefit. History is a serious benefit, ladies and gentlemen. I'm coming to the conclusion that history might be the most important subject to be schooled in. But the problem is somebody has rewritten history. So one must be able to, the only way you're going to be able to really find out what's going on is to have the truth of the Father. Because the Holy Spirit is what keeps you from these heresies, which keeps you from these lies. You see, I was tricked for a time with the Apostle Paul, and I gave him a free card because he's in the Bible. Why wouldn't he be in the Bible? Why would I even question that? But you see, sooner or later, usually the Father doesn't let me get tricked for long at all. I mean, very little bit. But you see, the thing is I wasn't really being tricked by Paul in the sense of I really didn't care about his part of the scripture. So it was almost like I kind of had this, you know, even though there's a few quotes from the Apostle Paul that I like, his writings as a whole aren't important to me, never were. And now I know why. So, it continues. Like John Huss, Calvin, there he is, Karl Marx, and other Jewish revolutionary leaders, Arius was a man of strong dynamism, of extraordinary perseverance, as well as an artist of words and with a pen, who wrote pamphlets and even books in order to convince the church hierarchies, the civil governors, and other outstanding personalities within the Roman Empire. The first important assistance was given to him on the part of Bishop Eusebius of Nicomedia. Nicomedia, who, on grounds of his great friendship with the emperor, possessed the boldness of wishing to win the latter for the Arian heresy. Even if he was not successful in this, he nevertheless succeeded, unfortunately, in leading Constantine astray by making him believe that it was simply a question of discussions between different Orthodox viewpoints. Under this assumption, see, this is history too. This is important. Under this assumption, the emperor sought in vain to introduce a settlement between Arius and the bishop of Alexandria. He sent his advisor, Hosius, the bishop of Cordova, so that the latter might bring about an understanding between the two parties. No result was attained, as if it had merely been a personal dispute between Bishop Alexander and Arius. See, some people just won't willingly mix things up, like Gnosticism and Christianity. Some of us want to adhere to the truth. Others will allow the mixing and become part of the deception and be self-deceived in these things as well. There is no room for compromise. There is no room for discussing a heresy and saying, well, we don't agree, so let's mix this heresy in with the truth. I mean, just, you know, that's what Judeo-Christianity is, and that's what the Catholic Church is. It's mixing heresy with Christianity. It's amazing these Jews are the greatest mixers of the world. They're not only the greatest race mixers of the world, they're the greatest mixers of pharmakia and sorcery. They're the greatest mixers of religion and mixers of other peoples. And mixers of animals, and so on and so on. In the course of these negotiations, Hosius and the church reached the conviction that here it is not a simple dispute between the different schools or persons, but rather a conflagration which threatened to scorch the whole of Christianity. This is worthy of being remarked, since it is the classical technique with which the Jews begin a revolutionary movement. Pay attention to that, folks. See, they want to mix something. They want you to agree with them and say, well, can't we agree to disagree? And can't we actually, you know, come to a compromise? Can't we coexist? You see. So, he says this is worthy of being remarked, since it is the classical technique with which the Jews begin a revolutionary movement. Upon many occasions, they give themselves out to be harmless, good-willed, of small influence, and without any kind of danger, so that the institutions threatened by the revolutionary germ do not allot to the latter its true importance, and therefore look away from applying their whole force against it, which is imperative if it's to be rapidly and effectively destroyed. I hope you're listening. Lulled through this outward conduct, the Christian or non-Christian leading personages are accustomed to avoid such measures by reacting in a modest way. This is utilized by Jewry in order to treacherously kindle the conflagration so that when combative measures are finally resolved upon, it already possesses an overwhelming force that it is impossible to halt it. Very interesting. Very interesting. So let's just kind of review that for a second. how they start these revolutions. It says, in the course of these negotiations, Hosius and the church reached the conviction that here it was not a simple dispute between the different schools or persons. So in other words, they like to get a conversation going on how we can work together and we can coexist, so to speak. And he said that that was worthy of being remarked because it's the classical technique which the Jews used to begin a revolutionary movement. So that's worth thinking about and hearing. It is interesting to remark that after Arius had finally been excommunicated by the synod, called in the year 321 by the prelate of Alexandria, and attended over by 100 bishops, the heretic at first went to Palestine in order to win disciples. And it is further worthy to note that the first synod to support Arius by betraying Catholicism, see, again, Catholicism, not betraying the Father in heaven, see, was precisely that of Palestine, as well as that of Nicomedia, which Eusebius, Arius's right-hand man, was bishop. It is illuminating that it was Palestine where, in spite of the repressive measures of Titus and Hadrian, the most compact Jewish population was found, and where the Jewish fifth column, which had infiltrated into the church, was very powerful. That's in Palestine, even in this time. It is therefore not strange that Arius declared outlawed through excommunication and in a desperate position sought his salvation in flight in order to seek support with his brothers in Palestine. He was so successful in this intention that an entire synod of bishops and high-ranking clergy, as was the Synod of Palestine, decided upon support of him and gave new power and prestige to his cause, which, after its condemnation by the Synod of Alexandria, seemed condemned to failure. See, it's very interesting that there's always this faction inside the Babylonian Catholic Church that's true to its Babylonian roots. You know what I mean? The Catholic Church is one of the biggest defenders of the Jews. While it tells you it's one of the biggest enemies of the Jews and has fought them through all of time and done all this, one at the same time, we know that there have been three Jewish popes. I'm sure that this book isn't going to mention, or if it does, I'd be surprised, about the three Jewish popes that we have learned about. And that's only back in the Middle Ages. You can imagine there are other Jewish popes. And of course, in recent times, almost all have been Jewish popes. So this is something that's definitely interesting to contemplate. But it's funny that within this Babylonian institution, there's always this protection for the Jews. There's always this, it still goes on with this Jewish pope today. It goes on and on and on. So the Catholic Church cannot be trusted because it's infiltrated, not only by Freemasonry, but by Jews, which is all stemmed from Babylon. And I can hear the Freemason, no, Freemasonry was back in time of Egypt. Yeah, yeah, but Nimrod brought it to Babylon and his wife Semiramis. It was rejuvenated. And you have the Babylonian bankers and so on and so forth. All these things are part of Mystery Babylon. Satanism, all these different things. Paganism, Judaism, communism. All these are revolutions of Babylon. Talmudism, Catholicism, Calvinism, Hagiism. You see, that's how crazy this world is. The world doesn't understand what Christianity is because the Apostle Paul has muddied the waters on what Christianity really is and who Christians really are. The Apostle Paul has it so muddied up that anybody can be a Christian, that anybody can be the seed of Abraham spiritually, which is untrue, completely untrue. And this is the problem. The world thinks the Catholic Church is the number one Christian institution in the world. But the Catholic Church is a Babylonian institution, and it is an abomination to the Father in heaven, period. But we still go on, and the world goes on, and the Pope pretends that it's real. And the Jews pretend that their media outlets are still successfully putting up the numbers and everything else when we all know they're a failure. The Catholic Church is a failure. It's done with. The facade is over, and yet the facade still lives in the hearts and minds of the beasts of the field in other nations of the world. I mean, people in our country, that they've been staunch Catholics, they don't understand that they're not being faithful to the Father. They're being faithful to an institution. This is what I'm trying to get people to get out of. I've been praying for the Judeo-Christians and for the Catholics and for different people to come out of these things and to come to the Father. I hope you're praying these same things because this is important. We do love our brothers and sisters no matter where they are, but we want them to come out of these things. We want them to finally know what the real truth is about who they are and who their Father is. And may the Father deliver them. May they be given a love for the truth, a hunger for the truth, and may they get their feet upon the narrow road that leads to eternal life. And of course, that only includes the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So, let's continue here. The study of this giant struggle, which lasted for centuries, is extremely valuable since it allows us to clearly recognize that the Jewish fifth column, which has seeped into the clergy of the Catholic Church, was then already effective with the same methods as centuries later, when it was successful by means of a crypto-Jew, Cardinal Pierleoni. That's how you say it, Cardinal Pierleoni, in usurping the dignity of Pope. Now, me has to wonder if Pierleoni is Sicilian in origin. There are likewise the same methods which 1,000 years later were combated by the Inquisition, and the same of which we are witnessing in our days. Arius and the Arianist bishops intrigued against the clergy who defended the Catholic Church. They persecuted and feuded against them and even attacked the venerable bishops. Venerable, the lovable bishops. You know, the ones that touch little children. And all priests, without regard for their rank, who had appeared to the fore through their zeal in the defense of Catholicism, not in the defense of Christianity, not in the defense of the Father in heaven, not in the defense of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but the defense of Catholicism. They persecuted and fought them by means of secret and poisonous intrigues and by means of false accusations until they were rendered harmless or destroyed. By means of a well-organized action, the Arians, and that doesn't mean Arian like white people, the people that followed the Arian conspiracy of this crypto-Jew named Arian, on their side strove to bring under their control the bishops' offices when they fell vacant, and they were successful in occupying them with clergy of their own way of thinking and of preventing true Catholics from finding admittance to this office, just like in our governments. These infamous maneuvers were set in motion above all. So let's look at that paragraph again to see another pattern of the Jews, because I just mentioned that that's the way it is. Listen very carefully. I might just change what it says so you'll understand. By means of a well-organized action of the Jews on their side, strove to bring under their control bishops' offices when they fell vacant, and they were successful in occupying them with clergy of their own way of thinking and of preventing true Christians from finding admittance into those office positions. Now, this is the same in government. Something becomes vacant. Next thing you know, you got three Jews running for that position in Congress. You see what I mean? You know, in case you don't know this, the heads of the Navy and the heads of the, I don't know about the Army, but many of these offices are Jews. The fellow that went over to Israel there to help them fly sorties. He's the head. I think it was of the Air Force. A Jew. Why would we have a Jew at the head of our Air Force or our Army or a Jew like Dov Sackheim as comptroller of the Pentagon? Why would a Jew be in a position like that? That's a compromise. That's somebody who's faithful to two different things. You can't. Jesus Christ told us that you can't have two masters. You'll love one and hate the other. You can't have two. So if you're a dual citizen, you know which one they love and which one they hate, ladies and gentlemen. And for them to be in a position of those positions, that means that our nation is compromised completely. You realize that? So we see here one of their ways of getting these things done and subverting our institutions, you see. These infamous maneuvers were set in motion above all. Okay, we already read that. In the campaign instigated by the heretical bishops against the Catholics, the uproar that they set in motion against Eustathius, the bishop of Antioch, is particularly notable. The latter was accused by them of pretending to observe the agreement of the Council of Nicaea, but in reality sowing the Sabellian heresy and discord. With these and other accusations, the traitorous clergy were so successful that he was deposed and an Arianist bishop named in his stead. In addition, in other words, a Jew type of bishop is named in his stead. In addition, they were successful in deceiving Constantine, who, in the belief that he was offering the church a service, exiled the devout bishop of the land and allowed the hypocritical heretics to enjoy his support, since he regarded them as the true defenders of the church. But more important still, defenders of the church, not of Christianity, defenders of the church, not of the gospel of Jesus Christ, defenders of the church, not of the Father in heaven. I'm going to keep pointing it out. You better be sure of that. But more important still is the conspiracy that they instigated in order to destroy Saint Athanasius, who had succeeded Alexander after the latter's death in the Patriarchate, how do you say that? Patriarchate, that's how you say it, of Alexandria. Already in the Council of Nicaea, he had demonstrated that he was one of the bulwarks in the defense of, again, the Holy Church. I won't say what he should be defending again. This had cost him the hatred of the Arian clergy, who recognized the necessity of making him harmless. In order to gain the emperor to their side, they accused Saint Athanasius of cultivating relations with certain rebels of the empire. This is the classical maneuver of Jewry. Again, ladies and gentlemen, is this not what Jewry has done back then, before then, and now? What did they do? Listen again. In order to gain the emperor to their side, they accused the accusers of the brethren. Who are they? They accused Saint Athanasius of cultivating relations with certain rebels of the empire. You see, neo-Nazi. This is the same old crap. If I'm white and I love America, then they say that I have relations with neo-Nazis. But I don't have any. I've never been to any meetings or anything. It's ridiculous nonsense. Because why would I go to a neo-Nazi meeting when Jews are the ones that are the neo-Nazis? But you see the technique again. In order to gain, I know I'm repeating, but this is important. In order to gain the emperor to their side, they accused Saint Athanasius of cultivating relations with certain rebels of the empire. This is the classical maneuver of Jewry in all times. If it is wished to remove any kind of leading personage from the sphere of the head of state, then at the suitable moment, a conspiracy is instigated in order to make the latter believe that the former conspires against him and is secretly allied with his enemies. Is that not what's happening with Donald Trump as they play this game? They're allied. He's allied with Russia and all this stuff. Now, listen, I'm not pro-Trump either. You know, I really get a kick out of the idea that he's building 300 miles more of wall, but you can just cut right through it or climb over it. I mean, you know, I guess the people just get fooled by these things. They just not, they're not understanding. You know, if you, it's just they should have built concrete walls or something that can't be gotten through. See, it's such a lie, such a cheap imitation of a wall, you know. And this is supposed to make Mr. Trump beloved. Oh, he's trying to keep these people out of here, but he's not keeping anybody out. Matter of fact, he's bringing more people in than ever before. So this is a classical maneuver of Jewry in all times. If it wishes to remove any kind of leading personage, right? We read that, right? In this manner, they succeed in getting the head of state to remove leading personage who hinders the Jewish plans. In such a manner, they accuse Saint Athanasius of having humiliated the clergy by laying upon them a linen tax, as well as sowing discord in the ranks of the church. Oh, discord! This slander is also, see, slander is something that the Jews use is a classic weapon. Here is what it's saying right here. This slander is also a classic method of the fifth column, which when it is seen that a conspiracy is instigated against the Holy Church again, and someone denounces it or rushes to the defense of the institution, folks, he even says the institution, sends its crypto-Jewish clergy into the field to accuse the defenders of the church of undermining the unity of the church and of sowing discord among Christianity. In reality, it is they, the enemies of Christ, who have infiltrated into the clergy, who with their conspiracies and dark machinations provoke those schisms and divisions, and not the true Christians upon whom lies the duty of defending Catholicism again and preventing the former from running ground. Again, we see the problem here that this fellow who's even writing this thing is devout to Catholicism. He's not devout to the Father in heaven. He's not devout to the gospel of Jesus Christ. He's devout to Catholicism. And this is a disease. This is what I'm trying to tell you. We cannot be devout to institutions and men. We must be devout to the Father in heaven. And we must be devout to the gospel of Jesus Christ and Christianity before any institutions. So, it has occurred in the case of Saint Athanasius, the heretical clergy were in reality those who through their mode of action conjured up the schism, but they possessed the insolence to accuse Saint Athanasius of sowing discord because he attempted to defend Holy Church in the face of the machinations of heresy. Well, folks, I'll read this. The blow was additionally directed higher up, for Arius and his followers knew very well that the unity of the church lay before the eyes of Constantine as the highest goal, and thus they hoped to bring down Saint Athanasius with a typical accusation of provoking discord. We're on page 216, ladies and gentlemen. And I always give a good piece of advice at the end of the Rabbit Hole Radio Show. Would you know what that might be? Don't go down the wrong hole.
Just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste, all the lives that they told erased. A man without a face, a man without a face, a man without a face.